Welcome to Bet and Breakfast, a podcast from BetSided.
Hey, does anybody want coffee? Who wants coffee?
It's sports betting for everyone.
I'm here to tell you today that the New York Yankees season is done. Stick a fork in them, it's over.
Lamar Jackson, I can't believe he's that low on the list that he's my bet for sure at this point in the season.
Early leans, best bets, props, parlays. If you can bet it, we've got it.
I'm taking the over on this. If you look at the last five games, this is a game waiting for points to be scored.
Tom Brady, I think everyone's heard of him. If Brady puts up the numbers, they have the 10th easiest schedule the rest of the way.
Get in, get out, and you're ready to go.
I think they're going to have to give him the award if Dallas ends up locking up this division and possibly even that number one seed.
And here are your hosts, Ben Heisler, Ian McMillan, Peter Dewey, Donovan Smoot, and Reed Wallach.
What comes before anything? What have we always said is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family.
I thought you meant the things you eat.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to Bet and Breakfast on a Saturday, 11 o'clock a.m. on the East Coast. I'm Reed Wallach. Alongside me is my guy, Donovan Smoot. We got you covered. Weekend, everything. We have the French Open starting tomorrow in the U.S. We have NBA playoffs. We're going to be breaking down last night's Warriors comeback win to go up 2-0 on the Dallas Mavericks. And looking ahead to tonight, Heat-Celtics game 3 from the TD Garden in Boston. But let's start. Donovan, happy Saturday. What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing fantastic, especially after we had a pretty good night in terms of like prop betting from BetSlip. I think the only one that didn't hit was Kleber over 7.5 points. But outside of that, I think we had a pretty good night. So I'm good. I'm waking up this morning feeling really good.
Yeah, the accounts a little bit, you know, some bigger numbers in there, always nice. I did lose my first bet slip baseball game of the year. So I am human. You know, it was a tough pill to swallow, but I guess that's why the Tigers are as bad as they are. That's why you just don't bet them. They're a bad baseball team. But, yeah, I mean, I think even our, like, game handicap, we were talking about the over game was a shootout. I know Dallas didn't cover, but I think, you know, obviously a much more competitive game too. I mean, they were covering for 42 minutes of the game, 43 minutes of the game, and then they couldn't get a stop down the stretch. But I definitely think, you know, it pays to listen to BetSlip. I think we gave a great handicap. And, you know, looking ahead to game threes in the next 2 days, we're going to get to that probably in about 20 minutes or so. But I want to start here with Chase Center. It's not Oracle, but it has its moments. But when the Warriors are cooking like they were, down 19, they come back. They end up winning 126-117. The Warriors are cooking. Steph gets going. Poole gets going. The whole team is, you know, pouring it on this Dallas team who has no answers. But it just seems like they feed off the crowd. The crowd is, like, infectious. That it just gets louder and louder with every Steph three, with the Poole threes now. Like, it really feels like it's into it. Have you ever seen a crowd like this that, or I guess a team like this that just feeds off this energy of their crowd?
I don't know. I think the Warriors are very, very like specific in that, just because like the Bay and Oakland fans specifically across any sport, like whether it's the A's, formerly the Raiders, and the Warriors, like having those Oakland fans, they are so just like, I've been to Oracle, right? I went to Oracle. Mm-hmm. I went to Oracle the last year that it was up, and I went to like a regular season game. I saw it was Warriors Cavs, and Steph ended up dropping 40 that night, and it was electric. It was awesome. And I'll say this, there's like two or three things that I truly feel like rival anything in sports whenever Steph gets hot at home, because Steph is the last player that I feel is like connected to a franchise and a community the way that he is. So like they've seen his entire career. They've watched him grow up. He is, you know, the Bay. And so I think that even the Chase Center, as much as I can't stand it, they've done a really, really good job of trying to, you know, get that Oracle spirit going.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard not to, you know, go nuts when someone like Steph Curry is just in a zone like that. Yeah. I mean, the Warriors, they scored 41 points in the fourth quarter to, you know, complete that comeback, go up 2-0 on the Mavericks. And so we were discussing, you know, in our, you know, pre-production meeting, you know, just bumping, you know, bumping ideas around, just like the best atmospheres in sports, because the Oracle crowd for sure, I think, is up there for one of the best crowds ever. Cause it's also the team. They're so electric. Like it's hard not to fall in love with that team and go absolutely nuts. I know the Chase Center, it's a little bit different now. It's a new stadium, maybe a newer crowd, but you could see.
That's a way to put it. A newer crowd. Yeah.
But it's not the same people filling the stands anymore. And that's was, I think, a big complaint for the Warriors when they made the move over. Obviously the pandemic had a factor to it, but even like Warriors fans, I've, follow on Twitter, they make fun of the Chase Center. They don't treat it like it's Oracle, you know, which that makes sense. But you could see the crowd really come alive last night, especially. And, you know, I tweeted a picture, Steph's new, like, almost like his like dagger celebration of the like go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's great. It's great stuff. But my favorite atmosphere I've been to, and I think it holds up, and it's funny because I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I've been to Barcelona before when Messi was there. I went to a Barcelona. It was Barcelona, Chelsea. I probably, this is bad prep by me, but I want to
throw it worldly up. Man. That's nice.
But I went to a Champions League. It was 2018. Yep. Barcelona, Chelsea. I went at Camp Nou. With my dad, actually, we were visiting Barcelona and they were playing Chelsea in Champions League. And my dad doesn't know a lick about soccer, wouldn't know a thing. But we went and the crowd actually worships Messi. Obviously, he's not there anymore. He's with PSG. But at the time, like literally, like anytime he touched the ball, the place would go like nuts. And when he'd fall, you'd hear like screams as if like he was like shot. Like it was crazy. And he scored 3 minutes into the game. Place was going nuts. They win 3-0 in the first, I believe it was the first leg. Yeah. No, it was the second leg, actually. I take it back. It was 1-1 on aggregate, and they score in the third minute, and they're like, oh, this is over. So,
yeah.
But the crowd was so loud. The place was rocking. It's this old stadium, but it's also massive. It seats like over 100,000 people. Absolutely insane atmosphere. And obviously, you know, soccer is just different there. It's like, that's just all it is. And so that was, in my opinion, the best atmosphere I've ever been in my entire life. And me and my dad didn't know a lick about anything. We were just watching. He scored 150 seconds into the game. We didn't even know what was going on. It was crazy.
That's honestly some of like the best times is when you don't know anything and you can just like walk into a place and kind of just like appreciate it for what it is.
Exactly. Just, yeah. Like I was like naive to everything. I was like just going in like with like the naked eye and like, this is just all it is to me.
Yeah, and so, like, you literally get the chance to just be there and, like, you know, experience it with everybody else and, like, live vicariously through everybody else who, like, lives and dies with it. So, like, that's super fun. So I have two. I have two options. One spot I've never been to, the other I have. So the one that I've never been to but just looks insane, I think that when the Steelers are at home and it's rocking – and they are like, they're waving the towels and everything. Yeah. And it just like feels loud. That feels like one of those atmospheres where I'm like, I need to be there. And they have I forget what the name of the song is, but they have a song that they play at the start of the fourth
quarter. Yeah, it's funny.
You know what song I'm talking about.
And after third quarter.
Yeah, it's either like after the third quarter or like before a like
Renegade.
A
big drive.
Yes.
Yeah, Renegade. Right?
And they'll go and play Renegade, and the whole stadium is just rocking, and the towels are going, and like visually on TV, it just looks so, so cool. So I think that the Steelers and Heinz Field, that whole thing is probably one of the best atmospheres in football. The other one that I've been to, and listen, we can't not say it, you know, Madison Square Garden. Like that's just the clear one.
I hate it, it's true.
It's because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the stakes are. It doesn't matter, like, what's going on, who's playing. If you walk from the moment you walk onto the sidewalk where the garden is, you feel a history of every single event, every concert, every you know, speech, every game, any type of event that's ever happened in that venue, you feel it. And so, like, you listen, the Knicks were 500 and playing the Hawks in the playoffs last year, and you could have sworn that was the Eastern Conference Finals.
Roger didn't say the Barclays Center.
Stop it. You can get into Barclays for $5 and still nobody goes. I don't want to hear about that. Like, the Madison Square Garden, it's the best venue in all of basketball. It's arguably one of the best in all of sports. And so that I would have that as, like, a top three, hands down, three at the absolute worst in terms of, like, American sports. Madison Square Garden has to be right there.
Yeah, and, no, no gripes here. As much as I hate the Knicks, I do completely agree. Yeah. But yeah, no, that Warriors comeback though, and the crowd getting into it, that definitely made me think about, like, what are the best crowds? I think you have to put maybe not the Chase Center, but this Warriors dynasty, whatever you want to call it, the Steph Curry era, Warriors fandom, like, they are a different level of fans.
Well, and okay. Please excuse this rant that I'm about to go on, because I truly hate the Chase Center. I think the Chase Center is a representation and a symbol of everything that is going wrong with sports. It is the mark of just corporate America and corporate money coming into sports and making everything so, so top heavy. And, like, I was watching Inside the NBA last night, and they had the chef come out. And he's making all the food for the crew, and it's like all the food that you can get inside, and obviously this is like the food that you get at the suites. We used to bring in out some steaks, some fancy pastries and stuff. And Ernie asked him, like, "Oh, how much is that steak going to run you?" He's like, "It's $175." If you are at a sporting event and you pay for a steak and you pay for a nearly $200 steak, you are what's wrong with everything. The Chase Center, they abandoned their fans in Oakland. They priced them out. They have this entire just setup that it just doesn't feel the same. They finally got the t-shirts right. They finally put the yellow t-shirts on the on the seats rather than the black ones that they were sporting for the first two rounds. The Warriors and the Chase Center is gentrification at its finest, and I hate it. It's awful. And I wish
so bad, man. That's big business for you.
It's terrible. It's the worst thing. It's one of, like, my biggest pet peeves about the NBA. It's just the Chase Center and all the stadiums that are about to be made that look just like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how the world works.
It's awful.
Well, good thing we're a sports betting show, though. So let's get into it. 2022 French Open gets started. What is it, early, like in the middle of the night tomorrow?
Yeah, like 3 a.m.
3 a.m. tomorrow in the U.S. And, Dava, I know you've been, you know, keeping an eye on the clay court swing. Tennis is kind of my secret. Like, that's, like, kind of my favorite, like, degen thing to bet on. I do love myself some tennis. But what do you think here? Obviously, we're going to start on the men's side. We do have the odds, courtesy of WinBet. So, it's become, based on the odds, a four-man race for different reasons. Four guys in the mix for four different reasons, I would say. Djokovic enters as your favorite, plus 160. Carlos Alcaraz, the startup.
The young phenom.
Yeah, young phenom. Obviously beat Nadal and Djokovic at Madrid earlier this, earlier this month. He's plus 300 now. Rafael Nadal down to plus 425 as he battles injuries, but of course the most decorated clay court player. They have courts named after him at Roland Garros, so obviously anything is on the table with Rafa. And then on, you know, Stefanos Tsitsipas, he's on the other side. Those three I just mentioned are all on the same side of the bracket. Stefanos Tsitsipas has the easiest path to his second consecutive French Open final. He's plus 450. So Donovan, what are your early thoughts on, and then after that goes to guys who are 20-1 and such. So those are the only four that I think are worth mentioning as contenders to win. Tsitsipas obviously has the, easiest path, like I said, but what are your early thoughts on the bracket and what you're seeing for this French Open?
Well, so the first thing is, and you've seen it on both sides of the bracket, but so Wimbledon and the odds makers have clearly said, like, okay, this is like tier one, and there's not even, it doesn't feel like there's like a tier two of candidates. It feels like there's tier one and then tier three, because the drop, right? Like you said that it feels like it's these four. At 45, at plus 450, you have Alexander Zverev, who's still like a fantastic player. He's all the way at 28-1, and he's the fifth highest player on the board.
Yep.
So right now I think like, and I feel this way more about the women's side, but there's a lot of value if you're trying to figure out like, okay, one of these guys might get upset. We're trying to figure out like who can be in the semifinals, who could be in the actual final and try to like sneak your way in. I think there's a lot of players that are live to be like a really, really good dark horse. I think that obviously, you know, the side with Djokovic and Alcaraz and Nadal, that side is going to be super, super fun because you have all of these guys. Like Djokovic is the best in the world, but Alcaraz is coming up as this young kid who can just beat anybody. And then obviously like you have Nadal who, like you said, the most decorated clay court player ever. So it's really just, you know, take your pick. And even though that Djokovic is like that guy, I honestly feel like the best two picks would probably be Alcaraz and Nadal, just because they have a little bit more value. And if we're talking about like, you know, Tsitsipas, even though he's coming in on the other side of the bracket to get to the final, yeah, most value out of anybody, but he still has to beat one of the other three guys. And I refuse to believe that all three of them are going to get upset. Like one of them is going to be left standing. So, yeah. So I think that the winner comes from that top three.
I agree. I don't think Tsitsipas is going to win. Mm-hmm. I do think he gets to the final though. I think that to me, Clay it's a real differentiator. It's you either have or you don't on Clay. And Tsitsipas is a great clay court player. It just sucks that there's three guys that are literally lights out, the best ever to do it on clay. So I do think Tsitsipas does get to the final. I kind of lean towards Djokovic. Okay. not at these odds necessarily. I think it might be take your pick. If I had to pick a winner though, I would take Novak. I think Rafa with the injuries, not someone to bet against on clay, but I got to do some more work on these injuries. I may want to wait and see how he looks, because if he's not in peak form, it's tough to go on a run. Like if he's going to have early rounds where he's not winning in straights, you know, he's kind of building up, because with these majors, you know, you got to win obviously the extra set. If you're not rolling early, and you have to take, like, you have to play four sets, you maybe have to go five sets, that's an extra 2 hours on the court a day. That builds up as you make a run when you're going to run into a Novak Djokovic a little earlier than expected, you know, before the final, or a Carlos Alcaraz before the final. So I think Nadal is definitely, you know, a concern. I'm not betting against him because, you know, he's Rafael Nadal. We just discussed that. I do think, though, he is going to go a little early this time around. I know his clay court record is, I believe, like 137-4 or something. I mean, at Roland Garros, which is just absurd. Yeah. I do think if it's a slam, though, which it is, Djokovic, I'm going to give him the leg up against Alcaraz. I think Alcaraz is the truth. I think he's the real deal, and he's going to be a superstar. But tough spot, you know. This is his first tournament where he's expected to win, and I think that maybe that comes into play against a guy like Djokovic, who maybe hasn't had the best clay court swing. You know, he's been battling some things. You know, I know he was sick a little earlier in the season, but if he comes into form, I think he's going to be motivated and he's going to be able to knock out Alcaraz in a five-set match. And I think he'll take that. If I were to predict, it will be the same result as last year's French Open. Djokovic beats Tsitsipas in the finals.
Yeah, and that's very fair. The thing that I would push back on it, and I don't, Djokovic is never like a bad bet.
Yeah.
The thing that I would say in favor of Alcaraz is the idea that we have for Tsitsipas to come on to come into the final on the other side of the bracket, Djokovic and Nadal are in the same quarter. And Alcaraz, even though, like, Alcaraz is – he's still on the same side, but he's not in that same
quarter. Yeah, he would meet them in the semis, not the quarters.
Yeah, so like, you're seeing them later. He might have a lighter path to get there. And so he might be a little bit more rested than Djokovic. And, you know, if – let's say that Nadal does come out and plays on clay the way that he always plays on clay, and him and Djokovic end up matching up, that was a thriller. That was a thriller that they had last year.
Oh, yeah. One of the best matches ever.
Yeah. And so if that comes back and Djokovic has to come in and play another guy like that in Alcaraz in the semis, and then maybe play, you know, have like three straight thrillers, I don't know if he's going to be able to hold up. But I feel like he can get caught in one of those. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, I think – especially if we believe that all four of these guys are going to be there at the end in the final eight and the final four, then you know, it kind of makes a little bit more sense to go a little bit further down the board, if you see what I'm saying.
So what's your best bet? I'll tee you up for that.
I'll take Alcaraz. I'll take the young kid to come in and win this whole thing.
Okay. I mean, that would be a wild rise to start up. I mean, I saw him obviously at the US Open last year when he burst onto the scene. I mean, the guy's electric. He's also like now just an absolutely chiseled out of stone. Guy has a motor like I've never seen. So listen, you can't go wrong. I think it might be a year too early for him, but again, we're splitting hairs. I'm pumped though when we get into the later stages to see these guys go at it. I will ask you, though, before we go to the woman's side, any early round one bets for tomorrow that you want to share? You know, I know obviously some big lines, but anything you're seeing on the board early that jumps out to you?
Yeah. So, and I'll have a piece coming out on BetSided later today about this, but I think early on, if you still want to bet like on the favorites, the key to doing it is doing it with, you know, the exact set score or playing the over under on the games. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the only way that you can do it, because if you look at like just the money line on it, these guys are, you know, -1,000, -1,100 in these opening round games. So even to get them at, you know, straight sets, a lot of times you're still going to have like a pretty significant amount of juice. And so the over under on the games is really where you're going to have to lean. So I think that like for Djokovic and Alcaraz, like, I think that I'll probably be playing their unders, whatever that line is set at. I'll probably play the under and probably get something around like -120, -115 for the under on the opening round matches.
Awesome stuff. And really quick, let's hit on the woman's side. Iga Swiatek comes in like a freight train from hell. 28 straight matches, I believe it is now. She is a winner of. Obviously, Swiatek, she won the 2020 French. She's the odds-on favorite. This is, you know, you rarely see numbers like this. This is peak Rafa to win the French. This is Serena to win, you know, Wimbledon, the U.S. Open. You know, this is rare air for a young, up-and-coming star. I wouldn't even say up-and-coming, just a bona fide star.
Yeah.
Simona Halep is the second choice at +675.
Yeah.
+675 at WinBet. Is this Iga's to lose? Obviously, by the odds would indicate that. Do you see any upset potential?
Maybe a little bit, but, like, the thing that I said earlier is you see clearly here it's three tiers. You have Iga in her own, and then Simona Halep, who's the only one that can like kind of challenge her right now, and then everybody else. The third person on this board is at 25-1, right? That's absolutely insane. So I think that you can maybe go down. I wrote earlier this week about, you know, some dark horse picks. For the women's side, I think Aryna Sabalenka is very she's very live to make a run. I think that anybody who's gonna win this is obviously going to have to go through Iga, and I think that they'll probably have to beat her in the final. But this right here is absolutely insane to have her be the odds-on favorite right now. Like, Ashley Barty retired after the Australian Open
because she knew Iga was coming.
Yeah, and there was kind of like this hole for who's going to step up and be the number one player. And Iga just said, listen, I'm calling my own number.
I'll take ball.
Yeah, she's like, I'm calling my own number. And she's taking it and ran with it. So I think this is for sure hers to lose. But and if there were to be an upset, it's going to be in the finals. So we're just going to have to wait and see who's going to be, you know, at the end of the road with her in 2 weeks.
Love it. Awesome stuff from Donovan on the French Open. And if you want some more, make sure you're going to BetSide. Donovan's going to have a full, you know, day-by-day preview and some dark horse picks over on BetSided. Now we're going to switch. We're going to go back. We started with basketball. We're going back to basketball. We let off with it, but the Warriors go up 2-0 on the Dallas Mavericks. Erase a double-digit second-half deficit. Go up 2-0 in the Western Conference Finals. Dallas enters Game 3, favored by 2. Similar setup, I think, to this the Phoenix series from last round. Donovan, what are your takeaways from this game? I know we kind of touched on it earlier, but what are your thoughts? I guess let's go big picture. Are you done with Dallas? You think they're done?
Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't have Dallas in this series, so this is kind of this is very, very on par. I think that there's three big things that I took away from this. One, Dallas, it's like there's no chance that Dallas can win this series because I thought that they would have a chance to at least make it interesting. I had Golden State in 6 at the beginning of this. I honestly think that they might win in 5 because if you were going to win a game and you need a split in Golden State, game 2 is the game to get it. When you're up 19 and everything's rolling and then you decide in the second half to just revert to everything that wasn't working in game 1, that's just you know, that's low basketball IQ from them. So that's one. 2, Kevon Looney might win the first Magic Johnson.
I think he's the favorite too.
Conference Finals Award. He's been fantastic. He's been awesome. He had like, yeah, he was great in game 1 playing defense on Luka. Then he goes out last night, has a career high, has 20-10. Still, and again, Dallas tried to attack him at the start of the third quarter, and he was saying no. Like you're just like this is a bad idea, but I'll let you guys keep trying me like that. And he held his ground. So that's 2. 3, and what I think is the biggest thing, and it gets lost because of the game that Kevon had, but last night was the best Steph Curry game that we've seen in about 2.5 weeks. And Steph finally was efficient from 3, and he looked comfortable running around. Like there was maybe 2 threes that I saw from him where they looked like forced shots. And one of them was at the end of the third quarter where he takes it. He tries to get a dagger to bring him within 2, and the ball tips back out to Wiggins. Wiggins hits the 3. That was one in the third, and then he had one in the first half. But, and I said this on BetSlip yesterday, if Steph Curry is Steph Curry, right, like if he's shooting 42-43% from 3 in these playoffs, the Warriors are unbeatable. And they're going to win a championship. So seeing Steph be efficient at the free throw line and efficient from behind the arc at a Steph Curry type level, that was a really, really big deal for me. So those are my 3 biggest takeaways from last night's game.
Yeah, I think Dallas let Golden State back in the game by a bad third quarter that included just going at Kevon Looney, I think. And we'll get into like if I think Dallas has a chance, but there are holes in this Warriors defense to exploit, whether it's Steph Curry, Jordan Poole, Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson's just not that good of a defender anymore, especially in a playoff setting. But they continue to go at Kevon Looney, and that got them into trouble because the 3-point shot was going awry. I still think Dallas, they're going to take a lot of threes, and I've said this to you multiple times. They're playing the right game, right? They need to make the shots, though. So by going at Kevon Looney, you are now not attacking someone like Steph Curry who's in foul trouble. Someone like Jordan Poole who can't stay in front of anyone. He just doesn't have high defensive IQ. And Klay Thompson. And Luka got into Klay Thompson, went right by him twice in the first half. That's obviously a gut punch. I still think Dallas can make this a series, though. I do. I really like Dallas in game 3. I'm going to be on them in game 3. I think they're going to get that one.
And that's fair.
I don't know if they can win this series. It's obviously an uphill battle, and they needed that game. try and take home court and make it 1-1. But I'm not going to count them out, because while Golden State might be better than Phoenix and more dynamic than Phoenix, Dallas knows how to rally in these spots. And if they're going to get a home court boost in three-point shooting, why can't they go back to the Chase Center 2-2? In which case, then, again, is it going to happen? Probably not. But I still think there's a chance, because, again, they are playing the correct math. They're playing the math style of it correctly. And we saw it in the first half. They built a huge lead because the Warriors were sloppy with the ball, which they tend to do. And the Mavericks were finding holes in the Warriors' defense. It's when they revert back to, you know, we're going to stay in this. We're going to stick around, have the ball stick, and not find Luka and have him be aggressive to hunt mismatches. We're going to go at Kevon Looney. Then that's when they run into issues. I think Dallas is – they're competitive in this series. Like, I don't know if we're seeing Golden State – like, I think that second half was a little bit more I'd attribute to tired legs from the prior series of Game 7. I think Game 2, the score at least, is more indicative of what the series is. I think it is a competitive series, if that makes sense. Maybe not in, like, the record might not – the even if the Warriors win in 5, like you said, I don't know if they're going to, like, just blow them out the gym. You know what I'm saying?
I think – okay, that's fair. Here's what I think is going to happen for the rest of the series now. I think Dallas gets game three. I'm pulling up numbers
on my phone while you're talking.
I think you're right. I think Dallas gets game three. However, I think that Golden State gets game 4 and 5, and they wrap it up at the crib. And that's how we
you
go.
You think blowouts?
I think game 5 would be a blowout. I think the closeout
game – they throw in the towel.
Yes, I think the closeout game is a blowout. I think game 4, they end up just using that championship grit to do it, because – even in the Memphis series, that Memphis series should have been a 5-game series. It should have been 5 games, but they went. Yeah,
I'd argue it almost should have been a 7-game series.
There's no way
they looked terrible those last 3 games, and they only won game 1.
What game should they have won? They should never have been blown out by 50. They should have went
You're saying they should have won the game. They lost by 35. You can't
If I'm talking about pregame expectations and
they were favored.
And aside from that, they would favored in every game that series, right?
Mm.
I'm saying the Warriors and the way that they should have come out, it was no job for the second game. I understand the Grizzlies coming out in that series and playing with a lot of fire in that first game without Ja, because listen, like, that's what they've done the entire series, the entire season. They were 20-5 without Morant. Listen, cool. That's your steez. You guys know how to handle yourselves. But game five, even though the game five was in Memphis, it clearly should have been more competitive. There's no reason for the Warriors to have gone down by 50. And that was just like insanely hot shooting. But I think that series should have went 5. Dallas, in this situation, they were able to capitalize on Chris Paul having 2 horrendous games in 3 and 4. Now, whether or not that's because of the defense or Chris Paul just isn't up to the task in these situations, or he was actually hurt with the quad injury, whatever you want to say, I think that one of those games in this series will be won by the Warriors. I think that Steph Curry is much better than Chris Paul. I think Jordan Poole finally woke up last night, and that's going to be a big, big deal. The only question that I have is, is Draymond Green going to be able to stay on the floor? Because, and not even from a personal foul standpoint, from a technical foul standpoint.
He should have been ejected last night. Like, I think – it's ridiculous what he gets away with on the court. Like, I have the Mavs to win the West and stuff. First of all, he was terrible, so, like, I almost wish he stayed in the game. But, like, I don't get, like, how about that technical foul Finney Smith got where Draymond scored that? Like, what are we doing? Like, I understand you don't want to throw someone out of the game and stuff, and I completely get
you. At a certain point, you have to, though.
You can't just let the guy run around yelling and stomping his feet like a kid. Like, it's not fair to the other team. It's just straight up not fair. Because you can't have him just yelling incessantly. Like, at a point, you got to be like, listen, like, one more and you're done. Even, like, they were saying on the broadcast, like, Steve Kerr's like, just play the game, man. Like, it's, like, annoying. If I had to guess, he gets thrown out in game three. When the Mavs go up, like, 15 again, like, he'll just get tossed.
Yeah, I think.
You know, like, also, he was, like, a minus – I don't know what he ended up in the game, but when the Warriors came back, he was a minus 7 – minus 17, they were down by 2.
Let me see.
I will say on the Warriors, I think they're just an unserious basketball team, to be honest, with the turnovers and the sloppiness. I just – They go on runs and they run hot and cold, but like, I don't know. I just don't see them as this juggernaut team that they're being made out to be. And just back to me defending Dallas, at least from a scoreboard perspective, it does look very, very similar to the Phoenix series where Golden State shot lights out from the field. They shot 56% again from the field. That comes on the heels of I could pull it up fast enough on my phone. That's the wrong game.
Also to your points, so Draymond was minus 19 last night.
He was still a minus in the fourth quarter, and they went up, and that's when they blew it open. Wait, really quick, just so we can keep moving to Boston.
Yes.
Golden State shot 56% from the field in both games, but Dallas has done a very good job of limiting their three-point shots, of Golden State's three-point shots. They've taken less than 30 in both. Dallas has taken over 40 in both. So, again, they're playing the math correct. They're forcing them inside. It's how do they stop them getting from scoring inside. That's where the real key is, where I think Dallas, if they could figure out how to defend them and maybe get some regression on the road, I think that with a three-point bump, you know, if they could sustain from three, I think that they're able to taking both these games and making it 2-2 going back to Chase Center.
I would say this. Dallas is not capable of doing both. If you are going to run Golden State.
You think Golden State could shoot 56% from the field again? That's what Phoenix did in the first two games, and then they pulled off.
If every shot that they take is at the rim, then yes. I think
what they have to figure it out.
Yes.
But I still think schematically, though, they're doing the correct thing.
Offensively, yes, but defensively, if you are going to run them off the line and if you are going to trap Steph on every single pick and roll, then you are playing 4-on-3 defensively and letting them get whatever in the paint. They had 62 points in the paint. If you're playing 4-on-3 below the free throw line, it's a wrap, especially when Draymond has the ball.
So many just like dump, like just pitching.
Exactly, especially when Draymond has the ball in the short row. So
another big stat from last night.
Yes,
they're plus 13 on the glass. That's like, you know, you're trying to win. You gotta minimize their, you know, extra chances, you know. So I do agree. I still think Dallas has a chance to make it competitive.
5-game series.
Donovan thinks 5. Let's move on. Celtics Heat tonight from Boston. Celtics, of course, go absolutely thermonuclear from 3 in Miami. They even the series at 1-1. Celtics overwhelming favorites to advance to the finals. Donovan, thoughts on this game? We'll start with just this game, and then we'll close with what we think for the series. But do you think that this series is a wrap? Do you think that Boston goes up 2-1 here? Obviously, big favorites. This is, you know, looking at it compared to the Milwaukee series. Boston was around a 5.5-point favorite in the Milwaukee series at home. Now out to 6.5 against Miami. What's your look for this game?
I don't know what to believe anymore.
I agree. I have no idea.
I'm so lost in this series, and I've been lost on Boston for the last 2.5 weeks because every single one of their wins, something like historic has happened, and it seems like, and I keep saying it, but it seems like a Nexus event. Like in game 2, they shoot 65% from 3 in the first half. In game 4 against the Bucks, Al Horford has a playoff career high and has like 16 in the fourth. In game 6, Jason Tatum probably plays the best game that he's ever played and scores 46 points and is hitting nothing but net. And then in game 7 is the Grant Williams legacy game where he hits 7 of 18 threes. And then you have last night where everybody comes out and Jaylen Brown starts the game 4-for-4 from 3. Al Horford doesn't miss a shot. Jason Tatum, once again, is like insanely shooting. And as a team, they shoot over 50% from 3. I have no idea what to make of the Boston Celtics because I don't know if this is who they are now or if they just keep being inconsistent and we're just going to keep banking on them having these insane highs and insanely low lows. So I'm honestly lost and frustrated and defeated at trying to handicap this entire series.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of a believer that these games were going to be rock fights and very, very low scoring, like first to 100 wins. It just hasn't been that. It's been a three-point parade and, you know, up-tempo, a lot of transition opportunities. I kind of want to look towards the prop market. I do think Boston, you know, I liked Miami in game one. I ended up betting Miami in game two because I just thought the line was a little egregious, but I still like Boston in the series. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but I do think Boston is the better team. I don't want to kind of go near side in this, I guess, total. I still kind of lean under, but just no real interest. Like we said, if Boston's going to shoot, you know, 50%+ from three, then Miami
can't do anything.
Miami can't keep up. They don't have the shooting. I do think if Miami's able to figure out the defense, I do think Jimmy Butler is game to keep up with this Boston defense. And listen, if Miami could figure out the perimeter, which I don't think is out of the question if Boston takes a step back. I know they're going home, but if Boston takes a little bit step back from three, I think Miami is kind of game to hang here. Two things to keep an eye on. Bam Adebayo, I think he needs to take a step up on offense. It can't just be Jimmy Butler, Max Schuss, bomb threes. I don't even think it's Tyler Herro. I think Bam Adebayo needs to be a bigger factor. I think he has to push closer to 20 points for Miami to have a chance in this one. Also, PJ Tucker. It was an ankle injury in game one, and now I believe it was a knee contusion, I believe they're calling it. It seems like he's going to play, but guy's 37 years old. Is that going to start to wear and tear? You know, Miami's starting to run out of available bodies, especially with Kyle Lowry. He's going to be out again, I believe. If so, how effective is he going to be? Duncan Robinson, I don't think, could be relied upon. You know, where are you getting the 7-8 guys to keep up with this Boston defense that has the size to, you know, really cause a lot of issues? We know that best defense in basketball. So I guess if I had to lean on this one, I would lean towards the under again. Just I think that Boston has to come back to earth from three.
It's funny you say that we thought that the series was going to be first to 100 wins. It's from the way that these first two games are missing.
Like it's first to 60.
The first two games have been raced to 60, and whoever can get there and blow the other one out first is
these game. Teams. They're just absolutely going off from three. It's not again. It's not even open threes. It's step back threes. It's, you know, batted balls, catch fire. It's crazy.
I don't know. I agree with you that I think Adebayo has to take jumpers. He has to take, because if you're just going to let Robert Williams stand in the paint all night and just be a pogo stick and block everything and allow him to dominate on the glass, you're not going to have a chance. You need to pull him away from the basket a little bit, and then maybe you're going to have a chance to rebound over Horford or over Smart, maybe get some like over the back calls or something like that. But Adebayo has to be much better. He's disappeared. He's been, his line today is at 13.5. He's missed that for four straight games.
I like him to go over that, honestly.
I hope he does, because I'm pulling for the Heat in this series. I thought that they were going to win in six prior to the series. So I hope that he can step up and maybe Miami can steal home court advantage back. But this Boston defense is just so good. They're everywhere.
So as we are looking, I just took a quick scroll through Twitter. Spolstra says Tucker and Lowry both will warm up with the intent to play tonight. That's kind of how the Heat have been phrasing it this entire postseason. So it does seem like Lowry's going to play.
Okay. Now, the question is for Lowry, is he going to be able to shoot? Because his offense has not been there basically like all season. Like, obviously, he's going
to – He looked awful in the Philly series. He ended up basically – like, he just wasn't healthy. He wasn't healthy enough to play. He looked terrible.
Yeah, but Gabe Vincent has done a very solid job. He's been very serviceable. He's hit a couple shots. If Lowry comes in tonight, he's going to have to at least shoot as well as Gabe Vincent. I think defensively he might be able to help on Marcus Smart a little bit, and you can put Lowry on Smart there and then have Butler and Tucker handle Brown and Tatum and do that, and then you won't have to spread yourself too thin.
But I don't know what the expectation is for Lowry. He just looks so bad in that Philly series. I'm going to go in with very low expectations. Yeah. But listen, those are the things that swung a series. Like, if you could get, first of all, one, Kyle Lowry, who I was a hater on way back when before, you know, he rightfully got his ring and all that. So I've admitted my wrongs on Kyle Lowry. But listen, if the guy could give you just a lift, like give like one game, you know, that's what you need. You got to get one of these Boston. You got to try and extend this series. If Lowry could give some sort of championship effort, and, you know, I don't want to get all narrative-y and cliche, but if he could really just unload on one game and give up, that's the difference maybe. You know, these are the things that turn a series. So I'm definitely interested to see what we get out of Lowry. There's also a chance he just looks awful. So
I'll tell you this. The only thing that I can count on tonight is Kyle Lowry will take one charge tonight.
Okay. So that's your new best bet. But what is your original best bet as we get? You know, I know we're not looking side and total in this one, but I know we each are on a prop. You're on Miami, I'm on Boston. So let's hear, what's your best bet?
I'm going with the only thing that I can trust for Miami right now, and that's Jimmy Butler over 26.5 points, -115. Jimmy's the only one, him and Max Strus, but in terms of like creating offense and being the driving force, Jimmy's the only one that I know that I can bank on. Because even last game when they're down by 30, he still scores 29. If Tyler Hero isn't going to be a factor offensively in terms of creating his own shot, if Bam Adebayo is going to look scared to play offense, then the Heat's only way to stay competitive on that side of the ball is with Butler driving the offense. And so he's going to have to take all of the shots. And there were a couple times early, and I think Van Gundy said it as well, where Butler made the mistake because he was looking to pass and he was making moves in order to pass and set up other guys instead of to score. He's going to have the ball in his hands. He's going to take a whole bunch of shots, and he scored 41 and 29 in two games. So this line is at 26.5. Jason Tatum is at 27.5.
Butler, you're not going back there.
I may for Tatum, but the point that I have in bringing up Tatum is Butler's line should be exactly the same as Tatum's every single game, if not more. Like they are that close together in terms of scoring output and scoring necessity for the. Well, actually, no. Butler's scoring is much more needed. On Miami than Tatum. So I think that this line is actually like low key a discount, for like a point. And so I'm taking Jimmy Butler. I'm riding with him.
I'm putting you on the spot because I'm also trying to do it in my head. But how many points do you think Miami needs to win this game? Just throw, like, again, this is like a completely, like, we're just arbitrary numbers, but like throw out a ballpark.
107.
Like 105, 110?
107.
107. Okay, how do they get there?
They get there by Jimmy Butler having 30.
They Bam get having 20.
Well, it depends if Lowry's playing, but I would say 17 or 18 from Bam and Tyler Hero having 18.
Shrews has to get like 15 also.
Yes. Yes. Now, look, I don't know whether Tyler comes from I don't know if his points come from the three-point line or if he's getting points in transition. Another thing that they're going to have to figure out is, and I don't want them to play this way in terms of like playing four foul calls, they have to get to the free throw line.
Yeah.
You have to get points. You have to get points when the clock is stopped and then be able to take a step back, set your defense, and not play this like up and down.
Transition opportunities have been a big difference in this game, especially because half-court offense hasn't been the easiest. Obviously, Boston, if they're just going to shoot lights out from three, that changes everything. But half-court offense has not been easy to come by, and I'm not a proponent of like relying on three-point shooting too much. You know what I mean? Like hoisting 53s. I don't know. Obviously, if you're Dallas, that's your MO, but for a team like Boston – I'm afraid that the faucet could get turned out. But speaking of Boston,
last point. I'm sorry, and I'll let you get to yours. So Miami, I saw from Nekias Duncan. So Miami's half court offensive rating in game one was 105, which is like I think it's above the league average. In game two, they dropped all the way down to 85 or 86. Right, it was a huge deal. So that's what I'm saying. Like the free throws have to be a part of that in order to get that side of the offense going.
Well, I do think in the half court, Miami is going to struggle either way. It's going to be a slog. They're going to need, like you said, find answers at the free throw line, maybe a little boost from three, maybe a Kyle Lowry boost. But that leads me to my best bet. Jaylen Brown over 6.5 rebounds. It's plus money. I really like this one. Just a few numbers on Brown. Looking at NBA.com's player tracking data, and I know Al Horford didn't play in game one, but he had 12 rebounds in game one on 15 rebound chances.
Okay, so that's great.
Great. In game two, when Al Horford and Marcus Smart both played, he still had 8 rebounds on 12 rebound chances. To me, it's more about the chances than the actual rebounds, because that means he's around the ball. He's crashing the glass. First career in the postseason, 6.2 rebounds. He obviously didn't play last season when the Nets took him out in 5. In the year before that, I know it was the bubble, but I still think it holds up in this case. 7.5 rebounds that postseason. This season, 6.9 rebounds. I just think at plus money, the odds are in his favor to go over this number. He typically clears it. He's cleared it twice in this series. I like Brown over 6.9 rebounds, especially with that plus money. If we're saying, I think it's more likely than not he goes over versus, you know, you're getting a plus money. So I like Jaylen Brown over, especially if you think this game might be more of a slog in the half court, more rebound chances.
Yeah. And we talked about it yesterday, how fun rebounding props are.
Yeah,
and how
that's why I looked at it.
Yeah, and that, you know, they're so random to bet on. But I like that, especially the plus money aspect of it.
Yep. And that's gonna be our show. Bet and Breakfast on a Saturday. Gave out a ton of stuff. French Open preview, NBA postseason look. I still think Dallas has a fighting shot. Donovan thinks they're done in 5. We both agreed that we have no idea how this Boston Miami series is gonna go. We both kind of guessed Boston if they're gonna shoot like this. Player props, everything. If you want to go back and check that out. But for daily bets, that's a good segue into daily bet slip. Monday to Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you're checking it out on our YouTube page right here where you're watching it. Also, Wednesdays, we got Jab Cross Hook with myself, Ian McMillan, and Amy Kaplan. And also, if you're on our YouTube page, make sure you're liking and subscribing right below us. And check out, I spoke with Malika Andrews yesterday to get her thoughts on the NBA playoffs and the draft lottery and the NBA draft upcoming. So a bunch of stuff on our YouTube page, a bunch of stuff on our website, betsided.com, our Twitter page at betsided. We're everywhere. Make sure you're checking that stuff out. Donovan, best of luck on your bets, and I'll talk to you later.
See you, man.